I'm the PSC chair for Beam, and so you know that means I write a report, which is due tonight, and I haven't started. So, yeah, I've been on Beam for the 4 years of its existence since we went through the incubator. And this is sort of the first bit. I'll tell you what Beam is if you haven't. Actually, raise your hand if you totally know what Beam is and don't want to hear anything about it. Okay, I'm gonna give it close. Okay, well, I'm going to go through it fast. I know that it takes 3 to 5 minutes. I keep it very brief so you understand how Beam relates to like other projects and communities. And then it's sort of more just stories from our development. Oh, I've turned this on. Doesn't work when it's on. Okay. Yeah, so what's Batchy Beam? And then Beam's journey is the timeline, and then finally is the stories actually come part 3. Okay, so Apache Beam is a system for when you have inputs coming in and you want to produce outputs. It's when you have a lot of input, a lot of data. It's a big data processing framework. And you need to use multiple machines. And there's only really about a million ways to do that, to use a bunch of machines. You have to have them separate. You have to have them doing something. Your computation has to be structured in a way they don't have to talk to each other. And your big data probably comes from a bunch of blenders and thermostats and fridges and cell phones. And so it's very messy and it's coming in out of order. So this is, Beam is targeting, like, you want to write a program to do this, you use Beam, and then you can use a number of processing backends to do the work. Beam is how you author code to solve this problem. And the other thing is that we try to target streaming and batch use cases so you can archive your data. This is the same. Another way to look at it is, like, are you building anything that looks like this? Then when you think about it, it forms a DAG of data processing, and then Beam, you should consider Beam, and it's sort of that kind of a system. This is sort of a timeline of other, like, all kinds of products and projects that address the similar kind of problems, and I think the point here is just that, like, this is, there are so many people involved in so many systems, and Beam is sort of the latest and the one that tries to unify a lot of this. I'm going through this even faster than 3 to 5 minutes. So, another perspective, this is what we always call the Beam vision. We started off to do this, and the project had the goal to let you write your logic in whatever language you like. These are some languages that do have varying levels of support in Beam. We produce some language agnostic, runner agnostic version of the graph, and then you can run it on any backend that, you know, whatever suits your needs. Maybe you already have, like, infrastructure and support set up for some of these. Cloud Data Flow is Google's offering. It's a sort of a serverless solution, but there's a million other choices, and they're growing. There's actually some that aren't on this slide because they didn't fit, because they're the newest. So that's the story. That's what Beam is. It's this portability between different engines and languages. So here's sort of how it developed. It started, Google Cloud Dataflow had an open source Java SDK, and it's just sort of throw over the wall. Like, I was working on it, we developed it internally, and we export it periodically. That's sort of the thing that Google's done with a number of projects. And it was kind of cool, we had hooks in it, so you could write a test, we had a local testing runner, and you could write it on Dataflow, and these same hooks, folks at Data Artisans just use those hooks to run a Dataflow job on Flink, and then folks at Cloudera and PayPal use those hooks to run Dataflow Java on Spark. And so we had these two people from other communities that just, not two people, but two projects, which I think were written by 3 or 4 people, you know, to translate this graph to other things that run graphs. And so we all actually got together and donated 3 repositories to start Beam. So Beam, in a way, when it started incubation, it was a merger of these 3 different repositories, like, immediately connecting Spark, Flink, and I guess I'll call it the Dataflow community. And then this is the end of 2016. So graduated it actually in just under a year, which is very fast. Along the way, the Apache Apex runner was written before we graduated, and then we've been a couple of projects since then and have added sort of support that's been ramping up, like, how many new things popping over time. So you can see we've got everything up top. Is kind of advances in where you can run a Beam pipeline, and everything on the bottom is advances in how you can author a Beam pipeline. Something
That's a big milestone. We've got Beam Summits now. There's Beam Summit here as one of the tracks of PatchyCon. So it became a big enough community that we have our own conferences. Let's see. This is a look at the evolution of our committership and PMC members. We're a project where the PMC is not as same as committers. Some projects are the same. This little bit, we have it go down briefly because when we graduated, we said, hey, if you want to stick around, send one email, and not everybody did, so they were dropped at that point. That's fine. I'm just showing these to give you a sense of like what, where the project is. The absolute numbers here, you can see, I think we have, see, I actually think now we have 60 committers for, since when I took this, and yeah, 19 PMC members, I think is right. This is our JIRA tickets. I don't know if you've ever done this analysis on any project you work on. This is what healthy projects look like, actually. So purple are all the JIRA tickets that have been like closed and done somehow, and orange are all the ones that are open. And there's been also like internal research at Google that looks at like any project that's ever existed, and they all look exactly like this. And no amount of bug bashes or triage, nothing changes this. bug bankruptcy will change this for like a week. So that's our project. It is active. This graph is like the number of commits by week to try to see like how the activity has been changing. And I can't make any sense of this. I'm not a statistician. It's wild. But we have about 100 contributors in each release. They're from all kinds of backgrounds here. I don't like calling out like companies when a lot of times it's individuals driving this, and it's individuals at a company that just are actually doing it in our off hours, but you don't make a separate GitHub account for that. But we definitely have like active developers, obviously from Google, but from a bunch of other very sizable companies, and like really cool smaller groups. Global Biodiversity Information Facility was one that I didn't know we were involved in that, and I thought it was great. And I just found this from Git logs and email list. So that's sort of the background on like Beam's journey. So then the lessons learned, these are all sort of like stories about like what worked, what didn't work, and what I think I do, you know, next time, and advice I give. I'm a incubator mentor, so sort of advice I would try to give to an incubating project. By the way, this is not tons of people, and these are all just like stories where I may be leaving out an interesting part, so like interrupt me while I'm on that slide, not waiting till the end. I just ask questions while we go. And I will try to speak more slowly, so there's space for that. First thing that like comes up a bunch of times in these sort of experiences we've had is that Apache UA is not automatic. Like, people don't just know it. I think like in the last talk that I just mentioned, if you want to contribute open source in your company, you want to build a team that knows how to contribute open source, it's a really good idea to find someone who's doing that right now so they can help mentor new people. And open source is very different. Like, the skills, the balance of skills used in open source is different. Right? It involves a whole lot more communication than you might be able to get away with a lot less if you're not working in open source. The outside world is probably different than your company's infrastructure. That's certainly true for Google. It's notoriously hard for Google to even use their own open source projects. And I guess you need to know how your team feels about open source, like, and why they feel that way about it before you like go into it. You need to know how your employer, like sort of at the policy level, addresses open source and why that is the way that is. And diversity and inclusion is a huge issue. There have been some talks on it where it's not the same within employers and in open source. And the things you can do about it are not the same. And the values, like if it's a core value of your employer, but it does not exist and is not supported in an open source project, then there could be some conflict there. Okay, so first, I guess this is not actually, I said I was going to tell stories. There are stories, but I start with a bunch of abstract, like sort of big picture stuff, which is, again, you need to onboard your new contributors. You need to spend time on it. And you should go to community.apache.org to find resources to do this. I think I went all the way through incubation without knowing that that's where I should go. So the resources there are awesome, and I wanted to call them out. They're much better, much more sort of applicable to learning how to contribute to open source than incubator.apache.org. And yeah, talk about governance with everybody and talk about committership. And I think one thing I've seen, because I've been on the team long enough to see a lot of turnover, is you need to revisit all these things. Like, people come and go, people forget. So just like if you join a company and you do 4 days of intensive training and then go to work, you immediately forget everything and just try to figure it out as you go again. Make this sort of a part of your culture. Okay, and one thing that I try to emphasize in open source work is not to focus on your project too much, and not to focus on like your particular goals. Like it would be easy for a Google contributor to Beam say, "Well, I'm going to just cram in this code that's going to get the feature done," but there's some upstream problem, say in Calcite or something like that, And it's interesting because within Google and a lot of companies that have a gigantic mega repo, there's like, you can just go and propose a change to some other team's project, right? And this is normal. Maybe you need to go talk to their product manager to see what the roadmap is or something like that. And there's these negotiations. But when it comes to open source projects, like, not everybody like understands that you should do exactly that same thing. You have some dependency that's not quite exactly the way you want, and you're like, why did this strange library that I have a transitive dependency on work this way? And you can go talk to the people and you can change it. So treating the whole world as your team and sort of treating all the world's code as yours is, that's sort of the dream. And this has happened. That's why this came up as like a lessons learned from Beam, is this totally happened, right? Folks who had never contributed to open source really significantly, never been involved in an Apache project, and now contributing across multiple Apache projects. So that's cool. And you need to be able to reward that, right? So I guess like if we have a document that explains for a manager who's understanding like how this person's contributions to Beam are contributions to Google, you also actually need to say like, well, their contributions to Calcite are contributions to Google, and their contributions to Avro. I'm gonna know. The number of things that you like might need to touch is actually quite large. I already talked about this. It's just sort of, sign up for all the dev lists and then filter them out because there's too many emails. But that you can be involved in multiple projects at different levels of engagement. Okay. Now this actually is a specific thing that we developed in terms of growing our community. There came a point where we had a bunch of potential committers. And KMC would just like didn't know exactly how to have a structured deliberation on like how do we actually get more committers, how do we figure out where the bar is, how do we evaluate people. And so Chris, who's around the VP of diversity, came up with this funnel for us at some point. It's like, think about these different stages of your project, find people that are, you know, there's people who are aware of your project, and then they're going to start using it, and the power users are eventually going to reach out to you in some way, and you have to like notice them and understand their context. And what we did is whenever a PMC member notices anybody like this, like, like, we've never seen this person before, or this person's now had four pull requests instead of just one drive-by, then we bring it up and we talk about it. And usually, like, the initial outcome is, let's write them an encouragement email. I don't know if other projects do encouragement email. I think it's like a common thing, right? You just write and say, hey, thanks for your contribution. That's really cool. And it's funny because, like, this always ramps up their contribution. Because they're people, like, even if they're not getting paid to do this, or if it was a one-time thing, and then they'll go back and do that thing that in code review they said they would do in a follow-up, they'll actually do it because they really appreciate it. This is a quote from someone who was like, I'm really surprised I got this feedback. So we blogged about this on like the Apache blog in some more detail. And this actually, it both is good for building people up, and it also creates some structure for the PMC to figure out how to develop people when you like can't really tell anybody what to do. You can't say like, oh, well, you did it this way, and this is actually what we're expecting, so change yourself. Let's see. pull requests are like the best place to bring people in, I think. I emphasize this a lot because not everybody's going to sign up for your dev list, and not everybody's going to get involved in design discussions. And a lot of times, if they do that, that's the second step. The first step is they had some problem, and they just went in. And sometimes they just show up and they drop like a 15,000 line PR or something like that. Or sometimes they go in and they just tweak something so that it's went from being not broken to broken, right? But you can still say like, hi, like, thanks for showing up. Really great that you want to share some code with us and actually like help us out here instead of just complaining or not using Beam. But yeah, and I guess it's just different when it's open source and you don't know the person. Because I guess inside Google there's a culture of understanding that like you need a change made, you open the change, and you get very candid feedback immediately. And I think you just need to be a little bit more polite when you don't have the employment umbrella connecting you. Oh yeah, and a huge problem for open source is silence. Happens all the time. You're just like, you give somebody a few review comments, they don't quite come around, you don't figure out, like you don't find common ground, you don't really know where they're coming from, and then the pull request sits there and eventually just like gets abandoned. And that's too bad. It'd be kind of weird to do that in like a conversation with somebody. You're just sort of, it's like, actually, it's not weird now when you have cell phones, right? You're talking to somebody and then you're just like, wait, I gotta check my Twitter. Maybe you get back to the conversation, maybe you don't. It's sort of like just walking away. But anyhow, it's like, pull requests are the greatest in innovation in the socio-technical world of software development since I started programming. It's like what I always dreamed of before they existed, and now they're there. So, love it. This is another way of looking at it. I found this when I was putting together these slides. Rappaport's rules, which basically say you first understand what the person's trying to do, and like even say it, rephrase it to them. That's a thing you can do. And then, you know, it makes it clear that you understand it. And it makes, you know, sometimes it helps them understand it better. Be sure to comment on the good parts. That's another thing. You can't just, like, give that candid feedback. Because actually, probably if you have three harsh comments, there's, like, 10 things that were great, and you just flip by them because they were fine. Just remember to say nice things. Yeah, mentioning what you learned is helpful because a lot of times I'm constantly reviewing code that I don't really understand. I've reviewed all the runners, so someone proposes like a SAMHSA runner for Beam, and that's the first time I ever knew anything about SAMHSA, right? And so all I'm doing is making sure it's sanity checking. So and then give your candid feedback. Yes, if you aren't growing or shrinking, this is true. I think Beam has 60 committers. 19 PMC members, needless to say, they are not all active, right? But it's interesting. This is like the starting point for the cool stories. So, because people leave, people come back, you need to constantly be like growing your community. But Apache is different than some other foundations, and it's different from employment in this way, which is like cool. We've had three great stories. Number one, Thomas Weiss is here. He's an ASF member now. He's a Beam PMC member now. So he wrote the initial Apex runner when he worked for DataTorrent. They were the company behind Apex. And just a sec. He became a committer for writing the runner because that's sort of a big deal. But eventually he left DataTorrent. And years passed, right? This was 2016. So in 2018 he joined Lyft and he right now is sort of instrumental, and he's up at the Beam Summit giving a talk on running Python, Beam Python on Flink, because before we couldn't actually run Python on Flink. And it's great, right? Like, if he'd written the Apex runner and not become a committer, like, maybe he wouldn't have stuck around, right? He, like, sort of, like, knew that he was a part of this community and be welcomed back, so that was a big one. And, of course, it enables you to, like, make fast progress when you're a committer. Second one is Maximilian Michels, whose last name I'm probably mispronouncing. He's here too. He's on the Beam PMC. He was here. He wrote the original Flink runner. He was one of the authors of it. And he was at DataArsons at the time, and he left. He worked for Create.io for a while, and he left that. And he confided to me. He said, you can put this on your slide. I left to go find
open source work, right? And then he started contributing a bunch to the BeamPython on Flink stuff too. And so I think it's interesting. It shows that even when funded, individuals in a lot of cases are driving the direction of these developments, right? You can view it as the employer being fired and hired as appropriate to their willingness to fund open source development. So, Pei, I worked with Pei, and he left Google to join Alibaba. This is all public information. Immediately afterwards, he was clearly, the Beam expert and helped, get these prototype JSTORM and MapReduce runners contributed to Beam. They're sitting on feature branches right now, but they're there if anybody wants to finish them off. The JSTORM runner especially, it would be nice to have more streaming systems with different consistency models. So that's those individual stories. The next one is interesting because I guess I think a lot about this community over code thing, and they're not separate is kind of something that came up, and it hit Beam hard. This in a lot of ways was the biggest technical impact on our community. Will you raise your hand if you've used Maven? Okay, raise your hand if you really like using Maven. Raise your hand if you would use Maven to build Go code. Cool. So we started, it was an all Java project when it started. All the runners were based on the JVM. It was the Java SDK. We had this slide I showed you about the Beam vision of Java, Python, and Go on any runner. And Python on Flink, right now-ish, is the first time there was any, the non-Java capabilities are realistically coming into being right now. So that's a few years after we said that was the whole point of the thing. So it started very Java-centric, and that was a mistake, right? We had a pom.xml that used the Maven execution plugin to basically run a bash script to call Python tools. It made the Python people and Go people feel obviously less welcome. They couldn't use their tools that easily. I mean, they developed obviously just using their tools and then separately had to maintain this POM, and it was real. It really hurt the community's development in terms of making everybody feel like they were welcome there. So yeah, 104. I love this one. We have 114 modules. That takes a very long time to rebuild. So this problem actually has led to the next problem. We had to change this, and we needed to choose a way of managing the project's infrastructure that was less Java-centric. So we had a couple of... we had a hackathon. One team prototyped Cradle. Another team prototyped with Bazel. That nobody but me actually wanted to try Bazel, apparently. But it almost worked. But so we went with Cradle. We had a bunch of experiments, we had a prototype, so we knew that we could port the project of Gradle, and there was no way we were going to get consensus because we had diehard Java people that were like, please don't do this, this is really going to affect me. But we did, so we had a vote, and this was one of these votes that was non-vetoable, it was just majority rules, we're going to do this thing, and we did it. So it's sort of like, one mistake, another mistake, and all this bad community impact, so entirely based on technical decisions. If I had to do it again, I would have been like, this is the thing we should have done when we made the first slide saying that this is going to be a multi-language project. So that's a lesson learned for sure. Another thing that we have changed, kind of unwittingly, which I really enjoy, is we had this large idea of when you're writing a runner or a new SDK or a major feature, you put on a feature branch, and here's how we evaluate whether it's ready for a master. And we would have formal votes. We had a formal vote to merge the Python SDK to master, gear pump runner. So all of these things were developed on a branch. Hadoop, Tez, and JSTORM were still on the branch. The rest got voted onto master. It's, of course, a huge pain to develop on a branch. Quite a few of GitHub's notifications don't work quite right. And then...
that seemed to be going fine. And what happened one day was someone rebased wrong, and the Go SDK just got merged to master accidentally. So we thought, okay, so here's what we can either do, like a fancy revert and figure this stuff out. And then we voted to just not do that. And it was fine. It had no negative consequences at all. And then the next two things, the Euphoria API was donated. It was a very large donation of the sort that maybe you would live on a branch for a while, but instead we just worked in the pull request and merged it all at once. There's been no negative consequences of that. And immediately you have people working on master, keeping up with master. And then this Hazelcast jet runner, we just apparently forgot about the policy. It was in a pull request that got merged to master. It's the first runner. We just didn't even come up. I think we deleted the policy from our webpage. Yeah, I just strongly agree. You shouldn't bother with branches, personally. It sets up this second-class place that is not useful. And re-review, like, let's say you have all this code review on a branch, which people, even if they say they do, they don't do as good a job code reviewing on a branch because they don't care that much. And then when it gets merged to the master, you don't re-review the code. So you also have lower quality. Okay, totally separate issue now. Now I'm going to pivot into growing community again. And getting into details of another way we do this. When we were having our discussion of the committer funnel, is we also developed rubrics for like what our expectations are, and we agreed on it, and we drafted a doc, and voted it, and put it on the web page. And this is basically PMC policy. That this is the rubric we're not going to evaluate on things that are not listed here. And this is super useful because now a contributor who, if they get past the point where they're contributing to the project and they think they want to be a committer, they don't have to ask what that means. They don't have to check in constantly, and they don't really have to play political games. It eliminates a lot of politics, not all, but like a bunch. It's very empowering for contributors. And in doing this, by the way, I would say like, yeah, be very skeptical of metrics. I'm an extreme metric skeptic. Like, I know you need them. You need to know. You need evidence. Don't be skeptical of evidence. But metrics, you know, people look at a problem. They say, I want some way to know whether a thing is true. And they find the nearest adjacent number and use that. And that's not effective. Right? And a lot of things that go into being a committer are not amenable to metrics. And I'm going to go through what our committer criteria are. They start with the ASF Code of Conduct. These are paraphrases. You can just find the Code of Conduct itself or go to our Become a Committer page. I think they're all sort of, hopefully, mostly self-explanatory things about being open and kind. But the last one is extremely important and not as obvious, right? Be careful in the words that you choose. You can have the best intentions in the world, and if you're not careful in the words that you choose, it doesn't work, and other people don't know that. Second step, we're zooming into the committer aspect of things. You need to create to help a product that will outlive the interests of a particular volunteer, right? Including yourself, including your employer. Grow and maintain the health of the Apache community. You don't have to hit all these bullets. Like, they help users. They help with sort of surrounding work, like the website. Lots of people don't do all of these things before they become a committer, but these are the things the committers sort of understand as their collective responsibility. And sort of the last two here have to do with honoring contributions that are not straightforward code, right? You can be trusted. You can trust a technical writer, for example, to not just merge code that they don't know what it does. And the truth is, you already are extending this trust to coders. This is not specific to non-code contributions, because a programmer doesn't actually know every corner of your project. Like, when you make someone a committer, you are also trusting them to not review things that are totally outside of their wheelhouse, right? Like, I should not review our MQTT IO connector. And I won't merge code there myself. So if you can trust programmers to make that decision, you can that's a human thing. You can trust people who have no programming background to make that decision. And then the specific things that we added for Beam that we thought were important and not necessarily emphasized explicitly in the Apache guidelines are that the person has to have a proven commitment to the project, so we know that they are trying to make Beam better. And specifically, they need to share their intentions, right? We want people who, before they do something, talk to us about it. And not talk to us. It's more like, before they go and do something, they become part of us and then talk about it because we're all a team. And then just that you're earnestly, you're really trying to make Beam better with this contribution, right? And this, you can hardly get past the first step. Like, if you come and you're talking with the dev list about the contribution, you're going to know whether or not, like, it's in line with the project. So. And then we have this. These last two are actually also, like, you need to accept feedback and abide by the conventions of Beam. So that's what we look at. That's and when we write these emails to people to say, like, you're doing great. Do you want to be a committer? And then people always say yes. Like just sort of like, are you interested in feedback? We don't want to just bombard you with negative feedback unless you ask for it. And everybody always says yes. And then we sort of try to outline it. We take these bullet points, say, here are the places where we could see a little bit more. And then we'd probably make you a committer. I would talk quite a lot about honoring non-code contributions, but these are just some examples of what you need to honor because you need them for your project to be a success. A lot of people talk about technical writers, designers, and community organizers, but one that did happen in Beam that I think is great is we folks maintaining, like keeping infrastructure running, have been recognized, right? So committers who don't necessarily commit the most code and don't talk that much on the dev list, but are keeping the project going. And they are code contributors, but it's just of a different nature. And I think it would be great to get non-code contributors onto PMC, right? Because your project is going to reflect whatever the PMC's makeup is. And that's the whole story, or my story, I suppose. I got a thumbs up. Cool. Thanks. These slides are up. You can go to the Beam site. Any questions?
How do you guys run your PMC? Do you have like regular meetings? Do you just have a dev list where you periodically update?
Yeah, that's a good point. We do have some procedures. No meetings, because that's, you know, that'd be a problem for geographic distribution. There are some meetings amongst the Beam project, and it's a huge problem. Like, I can never go to this one meeting because it's at a particular time so that people in California and people in Berlin can talk to each other, but I have kids and I'm dropping them off at school at that time, so I can never do that. So we don't run anything synchronously. And so we have a private list, sort of like the standard Apache thing, and on that list, we try to, about monthly, have a reminder, like, hey, if you've noticed anybody in the funnel, like, let's talk about new contributors and just people in this funnel from first time, new user. Well, we're not going to know about them, but like first time contributor, repeat contributor, committers, and also like about particular committers. We always make someone a committer long before they join the PMC, but we'll talk about that too. And this actually is a pretty formal procedure. We came up with this. We have this call, just this reminder monthly, and specifically say, don't talk about them on this thread, open one thread per person. Because one thing that happens a lot of times is we say, we used to do this, have like a big batch and just discuss, and it gets really tangled, and then you start comparing people instead of lining them up against the rubric, and that ends up sort of distorting the bar and being unfair. And it can really happen that you're sort of like, I mean, here's the thing that has definitely happened is a PMC member is like, well, Google already has a lot of committers. I don't think we should add this stellar contributor as a committer because it worked for Google. And that sucks, right, for that person, right? Because they're going to take that merit with them, like, for the rest of their life. And they've earned it. And if they have demonstrated the trust, then why not just, you should trust them to represent the project and not be beholden to their employer. And if you can't trust them with that, they shouldn't be a committer anyhow. But yeah, so we have individual threads for each candidate. That's a pretty critical piece of the puzzle. Yeah.
Cool. Good job. Thank you.
Yeah, I'm around. If you have anything else. Thanks.